The anger that first boiled over in Baltimore is spilling into the rest of America. Protests have taken place in New York, Washington, Minneapolis, Boston, and Ferguson, among other places. The message is clear. Black lives matter, and police brutality must end. While Baltimore is being described as a war zone with the deployment of the National Guard and a week-long curfew, protesters in other cities have been met with arrests and heavy police presence. So are American leaders listening to the angry voices of the people? And how many more will have to die like Freddie Gray, Michael Brown, or Walter Scott before real change comes to the U.S.? Find out in this edition of The Debate. Well, let's start off by first crossing over to Baltimore. Joining us via Skype is our correspondent, Colin Campbell, to give us a quick update on the situation over there. Colin, the National Guard has been deployed, the curfew's in place. What's going on?
Well, right now, I'm standing at New Shiloh Baptist Church on the west side of Baltimore, where Freddie Gray had his funeral earlier this week. And of course, that is when we saw some of the outrage in this community be manifested in the source of looting and rioting during that day. But things are a lot calmer here in Baltimore since those days. We're moving into our third day where a curfew will start at 10 o'clock tonight. There are many people inside this church. To our local leaders, national leaders, the Reverend Al Sharpton is here. We have Mark Morial from the National Urban League. We have the mayor of Baltimore, who is also here, talking about how they plan to fix the problem and reform policing techniques here in the city of Baltimore. They say this is a conversation they've been having for a long time now, and that it's nothing new, but they plan even more to try to change this. And they're even more determined to try to make these changes with the local police departments and try to make build a better relationship between the community and police.
All right, that's Press News. Colin Campbell, they're reporting via Skype from Baltimore. Colin, thank you for giving us that update. Now, let me just introduce our guests for this edition of The Debate. Joining us from Washington is a pastor and justice advocate, Graylin Hagler, and also from Washington, joining us is political commentator Richard Hellman. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us here on this edition of The Debate. Now, Mr. Hellman, I'll start off with you, if I may.
Thank you for having
us on. There is that belief that Freddie Gray's death in police custody was just a tipping point of built-up frustrations from a system that's defined by many as racist, unjust, unequal, and discriminatory. Do you see it that way?
Well, it's a complicated situation, but it has elements of the of which you spoke. But we must look at the overall situation in America. The cause of civil rights and equal opportunity has come a long way. You witness the president, the attorney general, and other top officials in America, in all walks of life, and in the Congress, in the House, and the Senate. But we still have a long way to go. And I believe that most Americans of goodwill, Christians, Jews, and others, want to live and let live. And in fact, the undergirding ethic of America is and should be do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the golden rule, so-called, from the Holy Scriptures. But obviously, there are individuals who are either hateful or racist or just badly trained and badly equipped so that incidents like this, like what happened to Freddie Gray, occur. There's no excuse for that if the investigations show that it was the result of the police officers' mistreatment, mishandling, intentional or negligent, it must come out. And we look for a full disclosure of all the information. Now, hopefully, out of such a sad and tragic situation, we hope to see reform emerge in which there is respect for all citizens.
Indeed, let me bring in Reverend Hagler into this conversation. Mr. Hellman has pointed out, it is a complicated situation. However, he doesn't view it as a systemic problem. Do you see it that way?
Well, the problem is that people have been in denial that there is a systemic problem with race and racism in America that has historically existed. In fact, right now, many people will say that we're in our third Reconstruction. Third Reconstruction meaning that you had your first one, the Civil War, one person, one vote. Then you had a white backlash that took back the vote and basically denied people the right to come to the polls. Then we had the second Reconstruction, which was the Civil Rights Movement, where the Voting Rights Act was passed, public accommodation laws were passed, basically equal opportunity laws and regulations were passed. And then you had a backlash to take those things back. And then you turn around and you elect a black president, and now you have the third Reconstruction, where we are engaged, obviously, in a systematic take-back and reversal of any kinds of gains that have taken place within the culture, within the society. I grew up in Baltimore. I was born and raised in Baltimore, in fact, where Freddie Gray was arrested was six blocks away from where my grandmother lived, basically a house I grew up in. One thing that you can see when you go to Baltimore is you see a devastated neighborhood, blocks and blocks of abandoned buildings. That is not because of a riot. That has been because of systematic divestment from the community. The community has lost dollars. The community has lost investment. Meantime, Baltimore has built two stadiums. It's got a casino over there. It has developed its inner harbor for tourism. But basically, you go a few blocks from there, and you find that unemployment is in the 50 to 60% range, and that's clearly a pattern of racial disinvestment.
Okay, Mr. Hellman, I see you shaking your head there. But before I get your response, let me just put this in as well. Looking from the outside in, at least, it does appear that America is a country that is deeply divided, both socially as well as economically and even politically. Now, there are those you see that are in the position of privilege who experience a completely different reality from those who are the victims of social, racial, and economic marginalization.
Well, there is no denying that racism still is a factor in America. I'm just saying that it has declined markedly. I'm in a Christian congregation that comprises blacks and whites and others, and this is not atypical. But each person must search their own heart and decide, do I harbor any racist tendencies? Am I treating all of my brothers and sisters the same, regardless of race, creed, or color? It's an unfinished work, I agree. We have had much progress, I do not believe, and I will fight to make sure that we are not in some new period of reconstruction, which your other guest has mentioned. I don't see that. I have not heard credible witness of that, and I think instead, my good friends on Capitol Hill, like John
well,
Lewis
the fact is,
and
you know, the fact is in Reconstruction,
others who were part of the civil rights movement,
in Reconstruction there was voter suppression.
They are working,
now we're again
they
back
are
in
working
voter suppression.
To, we
we're
are
back
all
here
working.
In terms
Reverend
of
Hagler, we'll
economic
get to you,
dollars
Mr.
being
Hagler,
invested
just finish your
from communities.
It is not to ensure. Wait, you're mixed. Reverend Hagler is mixing apples and oranges. To ask people to identify themselves before they vote is not for the purpose of racial suppression. I had to show an ID card to get into this building today. I have to show an ID card at the bank if I'm not at my own branch. To show an ID card is not over the top. But
right, Mr.
That's
Hellman,
a different
let me just
issue.
Jump
I don't
in there.
Believe that
regardless
there
of individual beliefs and prejudices, Mr. Hellman, regardless of individual beliefs and prejudices, what we're discussing here, whether the system of the United States, the government, and its various bodies, are they inherently racial and prejudicial?
No. No, in
the
fact,
answer would be
in
yes.
D.C. is one example. They are not. These are complete open opportunity, and people can do and make of themselves whatever they wish. Now,
okay.
It does take
Reverend
education.
Hagler, what's your
and
opinion on that?
Excuse
ahead.
Me, but you obviously do not. But no, I got to take him on at this point, because the reality is he doesn't know anything about D.C., where communities have been displaced in D.C., economically displaced in D.C. The fact is we've been taken over numbers of times when Marion Barry came back from prison. In fact, I live in D.C. too, and I pastor in D.C. And I see the reality from a black perspective where I live. Obviously, you live in a very white world, and you see it through a very prism of whiteness. Because the fact is that there is economic disparity that exists in D.C. There's political disparity that exists in D.C. And you go over to Baltimore, and it's even more complicated and harsh than what exists in D.C. And the fact is that we deal in Baltimore, for example. You got a 70% black population. You got a 40% black representation on the police force.
No, 50% in Baltimore, and in D.C. it's even higher. And
no, it's 70% in Baltimore. My parents still live there.
And council members and others.
That doesn't matter.
Anyway,
why are you going to point out? That's the height of tokenism, where we say that we got a black person in this position, and therefore we must have dealt with racism. The fact is, we have not dealt with racism because we've elected somebody as a president or somebody as a mayor.
Well, let's work together to eliminate the vestiges of racism. I agree, but this is no excuse for those who rioted and burned down the drugstore and burned down 45 units of low-cost housing that a Baptist preacher was attempting to build. They had worked on it for years, and along came this crowd of rioters, and they burned down the houses that this pastor and his friends were building for the underprivileged there in his area. So there is no excuse for this law breaking. We must work together, but we must work peacefully.
The community was in direct rebellion, and the fact is that we got to recognize that people were angry. They were taking out police cars because they were seeing and feeling that the apparatus was not dealing with the hurt and the pain and the anger out there. It was not dealing with Freddie Gray tragedy. It was not dealing with the Trayvon Martins. It was not dealing with the Browns. It was not dealing with Gardner. All across the country. These young folks took the stones in their hands to make their statement.
It is sad and tragic that Freddie Gray died, and I trust we will get every last fact, and anyone who's guilty will be prosecuted and punished to the maximum extent of the law. But there's no excuse for burning 220 cars and 65 houses and all this low-cost housing and wrecking the community.
If you continue to speak on top of each other, we will not be able to reach any form of conclusion. Let me just put my question here as well. As Mr. Hellman keeps on bringing up the issue of the riots, Reverend Hagler, these rioters have been called thugs, criminals, and gang members, but can they be condemned without understanding and addressing the underlying issues that have resulted in the frustrations? Why isn't the mainstream media talking about that?
Well, the issue is that's the whole way in to try to, in a sense, to lessen having to deal with what the demonstrators out in the street for. The fact is that there has been state-sanctioned violence that has taken place in Baltimore over the years. No one has decried that, except that when young folks pick up and they respond and react and rebel, then all of a sudden there's a condemnation of violence. Well, there should be a condemnation of police violence as well. The fact is that we're hypocritical. When we sit up there and we talk about all the terrorists, for example, in the international arena, but we don't look at the state-sanctioned violence that is carried out against those places where people respond out of their own frustration and anger. The fact is that we don't look at things evenly or fairly. The fact is that folks were responding to what had been done for them historically, what had been done against them historically. That neighborhood has sat devastated economically for 30 years. There's been a failure of the political leadership in Baltimore. There's been a failure of law enforcement in Baltimore. There continues to be a failure. And the young folks, in a sense, said, if you cannot represent me, I will represent myself. That has brought people around to take what is going on in Baltimore a little bit more seriously, but we got to recognize it's the young folks who has led us into this new discussion of what is going on in places like Baltimore.
Go ahead, Mr. Hellman.
I think the good news is that the leaders of goodwill, political leaders and clerical leaders, ministers and rabbis and imams are all coming together. They're praying, they're demonstrating peacefully, and they're calling for peaceful change and reconciliation between the races. If we continue to view this in terms of a race war, we're going to have a race war. If we can view it in terms of peacemaking, in terms of reconciliation between races and creeds and colors, there is hope for America. Obviously, racism, slavery, then racism, and civil rights abuses, and much more, is an evil stain upon our history. But we have come a long way, and I believe we will come a long way further. And sad and tragic as these incidents are, including the death of Freddie Gray, they may serve as a beacon of hope to bring us to a better place for race relations in America. Just like each Sunday and every Tuesday night, I sit in a congregation where we have blacks and whites and others all equal and all serving the same God.
Now, Mr. Hellman, but it's not about just race relations. It is what many are viewing as institutional injustice, where police officers can get away with murder, courts can be selective in their judgments, and elective representatives are not putting the voices and the will of the people at the top of their agenda.
Well, I'm a member of the bar in Maryland, and I know that the Maryland bar and courts and those of other states are working intently to make sure that there is more equality and that there is prosecution of wrongdoers, including police officers. Now, something that hasn't been mentioned, which is another sad and tragic aspect of this, is that if a black person kills another black person in D.C., or I assume in other areas as well, there is a far lower level of intense prosecution. Investigation,
right,
by detectives and prosecution is far less likely to emerge with prosecution of the perpetrator. Now, this is apart from the police, police killing someone who they're arresting, but this is one citizen killing another. That's a terrible situation, which I have seen witness in our
that's
D.C.
lawyer. That's why we keep saying Black Lives Matter.
Bar magazine, we are working to address that. It's a political problem. It's an economic problem. But yes, it is a problem of the heart. We must do more.
Okay, Reverend Hagler, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that there is a paradigm. That's why we keep arguing that Black Lives Matter. My friend there just really sort of took, as he was denying institutional racism, he looked towards the courts and basically confirmed that there is institutional racism in terms of the way cases are judged, in terms of the way police officers do not go to jail, in terms of the way black crime against blacks are treated and looked at. The fact is, we have disparity that exists throughout the culture. That's basically what our young folks are saying when they took to the streets in Baltimore. That's what they've been saying all along, is that there is this racial disparity that exists economically within the society, in terms of the implementation of laws within the society, in terms of the availability of capital and wealth within the society. All those things are predicated against black folks in this city. And so when we look at it, yes, we need to try to get beyond the paradigm, but you cannot ignore.
What's your prescription,
when you ignore racism, you are not engaged.
I'm not ignoring
anything.
I'm telling
anything.
You right
now.
What do you
right
want
to
see? What do you want
to
see happen? I didn't ignore it. I admitted it. What do you want to see happen?
You continue to deny.
I'm not denying anything. I said, let's work together to change
racism.
The situation.
That's one thing. I agree. We can work together and change the situation, because that's what it's going to have to take. It's going to have to take folks to begin to dismantle it in terms of really make sure that that money comes into neighborhoods like where Freddie Gray lived. The money has to come into those neighborhoods. Housing has to be rebuilt in those communities. You can't continue to divest from those communities. You got to continue. You got to lower the unemployment that exists in those communities, in all those communities where poor folks exist. You also got to rein in police officers who are operating as an occupying army in those communities and really, in a sense, frustrating life. What I saw on Monday looked like the intifadas that we saw on TV in the West Bank in Palestine. That's okay. Exactly.
Indeed, Mr. Hellman, that question being raised regarding heavy police deployment of specifically also the National Guard. Mr. Hellman, let me just get my question in there.
Mr. Hellman, let me get my question in there.
We are seeing the deployment of the National Guard in Baltimore, just like we've seen in Ferguson. In Ferguson, specifically, the National Guard described the protesters, quote, enemy forces. Now, this is not going to be very conducive to the situation, now will it, even in Baltimore or anywhere else in the U.S.?
Or in Baltimore, they call it lynch
Baltimore,
mobs. I mean, that's what the head of the FOP called it.
Go ahead, Mr.
Hellman.
It is possible. Excuse me, he asked me. Reverend Hegler, may I speak? I think that if anything, the National Guard may have been called out late. In other words, there was, if they had created some order in the streets after on the first night, those 220 cars and 65 buildings and untold businesses may not have been torched and ravaged. So you must have respect for order and right of private property.
Look,
the properties there, many are owned by the local people in the community, and these drugstores, pharmacies, and other businesses,
Korean businesses
serve the people of the community.
Reverend Hagler, doesn't that sound like curbing
racism,
freedom
if you want to call
them
Korean businessmen,
and freedom
but
of
they
assembly?
Do serve.
No, excuse me. There has been a total economic disinvestment. My parents owned a store right in the heart of the community on Edmondson Avenue and Payson Street. I worked there. I know. There was a blackout in Baltimore in the late 70s, I believe. There was looting and rioting that took place. Stores down the street, across the street, and around the corner were burned and looted. My parents' store was untouched. The reason being is because there's a carrot that exists within the community where people know who respects them and who disrespects them. And so what you saw in terms of a reaction that took place on Monday night, people went after those businesses that had disrespected them historically, that were not rooted in the community, that were outsiders that came into the community, because what has happened is that there has been a systematic disinvestment in terms of black businesses and the ability of black folks to get the kinds of business loans to open up businesses all throughout Baltimore. And so what happened is that there's an anger and there's an angst that exists that people know who and what those businesses are. So I want to submit that because we need to be really critical about what's going on rather than making overly broad and gloss over statements.
Okay, let's leave
really
it there for now. Unfortunately,
really
we've run out of time. That was Pastor and Justice Advocate Graylin Hagler joining us from Washington. Also from Washington joining us was political commentator Richard Hellman. I'm afraid time's gotten the better of us, but thank you very much for joining us here on this edition of The Debate. For me and the entire team, it's goodbye.